Welcome back to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto, and for the rest of the hour, an old friend and workhorse is retiring. After decades of meritorious service, a research submarine, the submersible Alvin, is being replaced. You don't put a submarine out to pasture. It's not sort of the right thing, I guess. Anyhow, in the 40 years since Alvin first dove beneath the waves, the submersible has taken us to worlds more interesting than any of us have ever imagined. You remember the things that Alvin first exposed? We saw giant clams, 10-foot-long tube worms, some 300 new species of animals, and the Alvin introduced us to hydrothermal vents. It even helped recover the remains of the Titanic. And the National Science Foundation announced that it will be funding a replacement vessel. What will it do that Alvin couldn't do? What kinds of new and interesting things, places, stuff can Alvin find? The new Alvin, well maybe we'll name it today. We should have a name the Alvin, new Alvin contest. Joining us now to talk about the Alvin and its replacement is my guest, Barry Walden, manager of the National Deep Submergence Facility at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, the home of the Alvin. He joins us by phone. Thanks for talking with us today.
You're certainly welcome.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Have you got a name for this new thing yet?
No, we haven't. In fact, we don't even have a process for coming up with a name. Personally, I'd just as soon have it continue to be Alvin.
Alvin 2, or?
Well, I'd rather not have the 2 if I had my way.
What's going to happen to the old Alvin?
We're not sure about that either. As you mentioned, the National Science Foundation has had the foresight to put the money into constructing a new vehicle, but Alvin itself is owned by the United States Navy. So the decision on what will happen to it is theirs. We're fairly certain it will not be operated in the future, however.
Not at all?
Probably not.
Go to a museum, maybe?
I would think so, yes.
And it's even working today as we speak, is it not?
Yes, it is.
What's it up to?
It's out on the West Coast in the Gulf of Alaska doing fisheries research on a NOAA project.
So what makes it obsolete?
Well, I think it's important to realize that the vehicle isn't a piece of junk. It's far from not functional and not doing a good job, and we will be continuing to use it until the new vehicle becomes available. It's just that as time has gone on, the requirements for a deep submergence vehicle of this nature from the science community have changed. And over the years, we've made modifications to Alvin in an attempt to keep up with those requirements. But at some point, what the community is asking for becomes just beyond the reach of what we can do with the existing vehicle.
There's been sort of an evolution and actually two ways of thinking about deep diving now, isn't there? Some people like Bob Ballard believe in these remote-controlled robots, and others now believe that you should be able to crawl into the thing and guide it yourself. Is the new vehicle going to be a human-powered one, or guided one, or is it going to be like more of a remote-controlled one?
No, it will definitely be a human-occupied vehicle, just as Alvin is. It'll have a single pilot, and it'll carry two scientists or two observers.
Mm-hmm. And what will it do that the Alvin can't do?
Well, the big one that everybody thinks of immediately is the depth capability. Alvin at present can go to 4,500 meters, which is a little less than 15,000 feet. The new one will go to 6,500 meters, which is a little less than 10,000 feet.
And what?
Excuse me, 20,000 feet.
And what can you do down there? What's down there that you want to see that you can't get down there with now?
There's a continuum of different scientific problems that can be addressed as you go deeper and deeper, and there are certain places where the science community feels there are breaks in the way the seafloor works. Places where below a certain level it levels off, and right at the break between the level bottom and the upwelling or something that's on its way into shallow water, something of importance is probably going on, something that'll give them a clue as to the nature of the core of the planet, that kind of thing. A lot of those things are beyond what we can do with 4,500 meters.
Let's talk a little bit about the accomplishments that the Alvin has accomplished. I mentioned a few of them. Can you run down a few more?
So certainly. I think one of the most interesting ones is right after it was delivered, which was before my time here.
How many years ago are we talking about now?
I started here in 1969.
Wow.
So I've been here a long time.
I'm talking over 30 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Alvin was delivered and we began the process of convincing the science community that this was a useful research tool. And while we were doing that, there was a mid-air collision between two Air Force planes off the coast of Spain. And as a result of that, some hydrogen bombs were dropped, one of which went into the ocean just off the coast of Spain. Now, they didn't go off, of course, but they were there and needed to be recovered. And probably the very first thing that Alvin did that helped pay for its initial cost was the recovery of that bomb. The Alvin group took the submersible off the coast to the coast of Spain, and after a series of dives, they were able to locate it. Hmm. And then they directed an unmanned vehicle, a cable-controlled vehicle, in the recovery process.
Hmm. So it immediately, it just about paid for itself right there.
I would think so, perhaps.
Yeah. 1-800-999-8255 is our number. Let's go to Neil in San Francisco. Hi, Neil.
Yes, I've always thought that one of the great feats of Alvin, one of the great feats of history, in fact, was the voyage to the Marianas Trench, the lowest point in the oceans, and 35,000 feet below sea level, and that was one of the all-time great events, was it not?
It absolutely was an all-time great event, but it wasn't done by Alvin.
It may not have been. I've forgotten. What was the name of the thing?
The Trieste did that.
The Trieste. Okay, I'm sorry. Alvin was a successor, yeah. Now, I do have a problem, though, with your terminology. Although it's not exactly inaccurate, it may not be the... Wouldn't a vessel be more a better term for a marine machine of the sort?
As opposed to
vehicle.
Yeah, probably, although we do tend to use the term vehicle most.
I know.
Well,
you obviously are using it all the time, but I'm just looking at a dictionary, and it mentions water navigation with in terms of a vessel, and it doesn't mention water in terms of vehicles. Now, I'm not saying that you're legally incorrect, obviously not, but it's just a little odd to me.
All right.
Yeah, well, you make an interesting point. We definitely call the surface ships vessels, and we never refer to them as a vehicle. So it is an interesting point.
All right, thanks, Neil, for calling. 1-800-989-8255. John in Tallahassee. Hi, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
You getting ready for some wind?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I don't think it's going to get up this far, but
no.
I've got a name for this new thing that you're talking about.
This new vehicle, vessel?
Vessel, vehicle, yeah. I think you should call it the Chipmunks.
Yeah, I have to straighten that out. I was at a meeting a while back where somebody suggested Theodore for the same reason. They obviously related the name Alvin to the chipmunks, but Alvin was named for the oceanographer Alan Vine.
Mm.
It's Alan Vine who was an oceanographer here at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Conceived of the idea of a manned submersible being a useful science tool, and then carried that concept forward by convincing the Navy to go ahead and fund the construction, or actually the design and construction, of a vehicle, and we got Alvin as a result of that. Even Alvin's original mothership, which was named Lulu was Alan Vine's mother's name.
Huh.
John, I just thought it would be a good name. It would fit.
John, there's no accounting for taste. I don't know how those weather people avoided calling those storms down there Bonnie and Clyde instead of calling them Bonnie and Charlie.
Good. I know. We'll leave it to Florida to get it wrong, right?
Glad you said it, not me.
All right. You have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about the successor to the Alvin this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We're talking with Barry Walden, manager of the National Deep Submergence Facility at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. How soon are we going to have this new vessel?
Well, we're hoping that we'll have something functional by the beginning of 2008.
Oh.
We'd like to even do it a little quicker than that, but looking at things realistically, we probably won't be able to.
And who's going to take the first dive? Are you going to crawl in and take the first dive yourself?
My guess is that I'll be one of them. I'll undoubtedly decide which of the principal designers has the most to lose by being in there, and he'll be right in there with me.
You do this on a Friday, and we'll do this live on Science Friday. How about that? The first dive.
All right.
I'd love to do that. And where is the prime spot you'd like to go with something new and shiny like this? Let's say you get, you know, after you do your shakeout dives.
Well, actually, there are many, many places that we can't go to with Alvin, and we as an organization would love to be able to go to. I'm hoping that with the new submersible, we'll be able to go just to places like the Indian Ocean, the Western Pacific, the Southern Atlantic, places that we could go there with Alvin now, but just the way the science programs have been funded and the directions that the present research is taking has been difficult for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is that the new submarine, along with it, will come some brand new science programs in places that are outside of what we are presently operating in.
You know, there's like a debate about this. I mentioned before the robotics or the human element. We talk about it going to Mars, sending robots or astronauts. Is there sort of a debate like that when we talk about submersibles?
Well, there certainly is, depending on who you talk to. Our feeling, and we operate the Jason ROV, so
right. You
know, we actually have a vested interest in both of these vehicle types, as well as the unmanned robotic vehicles. Our feeling, however, is that there's room for all of the vehicle types in the requirements of the science community. There are some things that there's no question an unmanned cable-controlled vehicle is the right choice for, but there are other things that using a manned submersible is clearly the best option.
You're going to have better window? There's a better picture window design on this new one?
Yes, we are. One of the major design changes that we're planning on making is improving the visibility of the two observers. The pilot has always had a front-looking viewport that he uses primarily. The observers have not been able to see what the pilot is doing. Their viewports have been around to the sides. And this was a throwback to when video equipment for undersea operations was not as sophisticated as it is today. And the thought was that it would be wasteful to have overlapping views. We wanted all of the windows to see something different. Well, times have changed, and now it would be far better if the two observers could see what the pilot is doing, because he's manipulating samplers and collecting material, and it's important for the scientists to see exactly how that's being done so that they can properly analyze it when they get back to the surface. So we will actually be increasing the diameter a little bit of those viewports, but more importantly, we'll have overlapping views for the two observers.
Sounds great. Well, thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Barry Walden is the manager of the National Deep Submergence Facility at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. That's about all we have time for today. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick, Paul Masiello, and Enrico Cardi in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from MPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. Have comments or questions, write to us at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. And you can get back editions of Science Friday. Also, leave us email. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.
Out and swim about the coral that lies beneath the waves.
Beneath the ocean waves.
Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing we're happy and we're safe.
Happy and we're safe.
We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden with you.
in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
Thank you.